It was not a question of pointing out countries predestined, they stressed to me, to be a guide or beacon for the others, but of an unquestionable reality, that, due to their recent history, these countries had demonstrated that they had an admirable vitality and a very clear notion of what is just and what is unjust. I confess that I felt proud to belong to that community, which they did not name. It was not difficult to guess that they were referring to Spain. Nevertheless, I stuck to my guns, but in any Mediterranean country there are important politicians and military men. Or to entrust the message to several of them at the same time, to one from each power. It would serve no purpose. They would adulterate or silence our message. In fact, this has happened on several occasions, regarding our visits and also in relation to our contacts on earth with humble people or people without important positions in their respective countries. On the other hand, this could mean disdain towards other terrestrial communities. Don't you think so? In any case, you cannot ignore the limited scope of people like me to transmit this message, and even our great vulnerability in the face of the enormous persuasive resources that certain powers have at their disposal to silence us, or worse things. You are free to spread the message or not, to try to spread it publicly or to do so at personal and even confidential levels. We will be very grateful to you in any case. And you must understand that we cannot proceed with you in a different way than we do within our harmonious universal brotherhood. You are completely free before us, and you would disappoint us if you did not use that freedom without any restrictions. Suddenly, my confusion was such that, despite wanting to tell them that I still have enough temerity to send the message to the four winds and stay calm, I didn't say anything. Note that in my life I have met people of infinite kindness. But there, before those beings from other worlds whom very few have ever met, I was faced with a strange and strange feeling. I had been so bold as to assume that they had genuine human character, to use our words, but I was measuring another of the shameful injustices that we earthlings are capable of, blinded as we are by our much-valued superiority, both on the moral and material plane. I was also amazed at the dizzying speed with which my mind coordinated ideas and how the reflections followed one another, coining, as if by lightning, the answer, the reply or the question. The message will be publicly disseminated, and I will manage to ensure that it is neither diminished nor confused. It is not the first time, of course, that I have been entrusted with unexpected missions and sometimes somewhat excessive in relation to my faculties or possibilities. But it was enough for someone to trust me for me to consider myself obliged, morally speaking, to not disappoint him. And then I grew and achieved it. So, when I said, in the past, here I go. I was the first to be surprised to see the things that the last of the strays on earth can achieve, if he sets his mind to it. And, in this case, with the help of my editor, who, after nearly 2 hours of conversation, and despite seeing my firm resolution, said to me, "Now I am going to talk to you as a friend and not as an editor. Do you know the mess you are getting yourself into, kid, by writing this book?" And I answered him, "The same, or almost, that you are getting yourself into by publishing it." "Well, go ahead," were his last words. Now with a certain extraterrestrial parsimony, I dropped another question. "Well, all that about the Mediterranean as a source of life and regeneration is very good, but now, please, tell me why you have chosen me as your messenger." Only a few seconds passed before the voice began to give its answer. But I immediately noticed, and with great intensity, as if a more direct communication had been established between us, between them and me, and I felt them closer to me than ever before. I would almost say that I had the sensation of being one of them. And memories of my childhood, youth, and different moments of my later life, which I had completely forgotten, paraded through my mind like meteors. It seemed as if someone had decided to put me in a trance to better understand what they were going to tell me, by first designing in my memory the picture or the scenario of my past experiences. "First of all, we will tell you that you have been chosen, after a meticulous study of your personality, for reasons that are both particular and general. The particular ones are these: that you are a free and independent man. That is to say, that you strive to preserve, together with your partner, the widest possible areas of independence. And that neither you nor your partner belong to any party or sect. You enjoy a certain popularity as a serious historian, and this because you are one of the few who investigates history on the ground and knows how to hear it from the mouths of humble people. For one of your books, the one dedicated to the Spanish guerrillas, you agreed to take very serious risks, traveling through Spanish lands, to bring to light facts that had been silenced or falsified. The general reasons are condensed in that you belong to one of those Mediterranean communities and you are fully identified with everything it represents. Another curious fact is that script of yours for the cinema, in which, intuitively, you hit the mark several times regarding us. Although it is also true that you offered a somewhat special version of the fact of our immortality. In any case, by giving that treatment to the script, you demonstrated understanding towards us and a certain generosity in admitting the possibility of our existence. In the script, you also anticipated, although with less dangerous repercussions than now, how harmful the intervention of the people of the earth in our world could be. We are not saying that you believed in it, but that you somehow admitted that possibility. Is that not so?
Yes, yes.
In those years I asked myself some questions that seemed logical to me, at least for someone who, like me, was never too conditioned by transcendental atavisms. There was a great silence here. My determination to capture some noise, to reject a silence of dimensions unknown to me, I have never heard anything like it, shows to what extent the nervous or emotional tension of earthlings is harmful. In these reflections of mine I could not say, to be honest, what there is of sensation live or after the fact. But what is certain is that their silence did not satisfy me completely because of me, because I continued to insist on hearing noises. At least at first. Then I got used to it and I seemed to remember that it was like an incomparable sedative. I suppose it must be something like the dream cures that are administered on Earth to people who can afford them. I couldn't help asking them, and what do those long silences mean? Are they usual or are they part of a plan? I confess that I immediately regretted my insolence. But, as it provoked a slight laugh from them, I said to myself, "Welcome to insolence. Please don't be evil-minded. There is no set plan here. Our conversation is marked by the channels indicated by curiosity and the desire to know. We are free beings, completely free, understand that well. And therefore, we must respect the freedom of others, because without collective freedom, individual freedom does not exist. We also never use coercion or blackmail, which, like violence, are feelings and reactions unknown to us. Genuine silence, unknown to earthlings, is a common resource in our communities, as necessary for us as moral or material nourishment. It is part of our vital energy. Without it our organism would surely not function so well. And you, look how curious it is, have finally decided to use it as a curative medicine and not as a preventive measure. That is one of our best sources of life, that of foresight. Tonight perhaps the silences have been longer in your honor, thus your brain rests more and better, and assimilates more calmly our exchange of impressions. We observe, however, that you do not seem willing to be completely silent inside. Are we wrong? It must be lack of habit. But I promise you that I will apply myself because I understand that this total absence of noise has to be very beneficial for any human organism. And animal, dear friend, they interrupted me, and vegetal and environmental. Silence is a unique and incomparably beneficial medicine for the entire universe. That they followed me without letting go for a single instant was demonstrated by the fact that when I began to think, immediately that great silence arose which, today, by natural means, we earthlings would be incapable of reproducing. And I noticed this, they always think and project in universal terms. The universe is, at all times, the stage for the fantastic play that they have been performing for thousands or millions, who knows, of years and, as they repeatedly told me, the inexhaustible source of their life. And, at a certain moment, they would insist, that universe of which you are also a part, which belongs to you as much as to us. So I stressed, on the one hand we have what you call cosmic rest and on the other this silence, the slowness of your movements, the acting without the slightest alteration, and this speaking with your eyes, plus other details that surely escape me. Are those the secrets of your youth? That is to say, that you stop at the optimal point of your maturity. Exactly, dear companion, this way of behaving avoids all those complications that you know on Earth due to stress. As we have already told you, prevention is one of the keys to our existence and not only the care of our organisms. This is the second time you have called me dear comrade. What does that mean to you? That we are undertaking a mission together, the dissemination of the message, and that we have complete confidence in you. I meant the word dear, I clarified. We have pronounced that word as a small concession to your language. So that you better understand to what degree we have valued your sincerity from the first moment. With this we also express our profound gratitude for your fraternal collaboration. Final notes. It is perfectly possible to admit the existence of life and beings endowed with reason on planets in our system and elsewhere in the universe. It is possible that, depending on the force of gravity of a given planet, its atmosphere and other specific conditions, these beings endowed with reason perceive the outside world through senses that differ considerably from ours. Vladimir Ilyich Ulyanov, Lenin. The Earth is the cradle of humanity. But one does not always live in the cradle. Konstantin Tsiolkovsky, father of Soviet rockets. Latest news, just before the book was due to be published, the Barcelona magazine Actual, issue 1, March 10, 1982, published a report on the measures taken by the Soviet Union to listen to the voices of the cosmos. We transcribe the most interesting passages with a double objective, to show our readers the scientific interest that it arouses in a power with enormous resources and the desire to arouse curiosity there about the universe and everything that integrates and composes it. Hello, Earthlings. At the end of September 1980, the new radio telescope located near Stavropol, in the south of the USSR, picked up signals from outer space. Press censorship was immediately imposed on this very important event. Not a single word about it appeared in the Soviet media. However, within the narrow, the news not only spread beyond the boundaries of the Soviet scientific community, but it had the effect of a bombshell. Excited astronomers, impressed by the magnitude of the news, exchanged information that filtered down to them from Stavropol. Astrophysicists at the Sternberg Institute for Cosmic Exploration on the campus of Moscow State University were reluctant to discuss the matter. The information, they said, had to be official. Only Professor Nikolai Semyonovich Kardashov, deputy director of the institute, was authorized to comment on the matter. I can neither confirm nor deny the rumor, although it is not impossible. Our new radio telescope is an incredible instrument. I am sure that it is only a matter of time, 5 or 10 years at the most, before receiving and deciphering messages from other space civilizations becomes routine at Rattan 600. Rattan 600 is the code name for the gigantic new scientific facility in the North Caucasus, which took 9 years to build and has been fully operational since the end of last year. The initials Rattan stand for the Radio Observatory of the Academy of Sciences. And the number 600 refers to the diameter of its gigantic radio telescope. It is 2 kilometers long, although it has been curved like the perimeter of a large wall. Rattan 600 has lived up to our expectations. We believed that once it was completed, it would put us in contact with outside civilizations, and so it has. The signals it picked up emanated from the general area of the center of our galaxy and were equivalent to sounds emitted at regular intervals. They were received at the wavelength of 1.8 centimeters, which is the lower end of the Rattan 600 field. The general opinion is that a huge amount of work is needed to solve the puzzle presented by the captured fragments. This will also require the construction of an expensive additional facility at Rattan and synchronization with radio telescopes in Uzbekistan and Kamchatka to cover the intended wavelength. Both plans are already in the process of being implemented. We are certain that we were discovered long ago by super civilizations whose superior optical telescopes, working unhindered by interstellar dust, have probably catalogued all the planets in our galaxy, including Earth. The messages sent from there outward are addressed to us in particular because they are focused on our sun day. Who are they and what do they have to tell us? It is hoped that answers to these two basic questions will be available within the next 10 years. Soviet scientists have so far come to the conclusion that a number of planets are inhabited at the very center of the Milky Way, about 30,000 light-years from Earth. A section of Rattan 600 is permanently centered on this particular point in our galaxy. That is the direction from which the messages come. We do not exclude, however, the existence of civilizations in other areas of our galaxy. These are the youngest, even though they are many thousands of years older than us. We are certain that they are undergoing a gradual transformation from a life very similar to ours to a longer life, with entirely replaceable body parts and immunized against diseases, half humanoid, half robot. As their evolution continues and the planets on which they live wear out, they will want to move to other points. Finally, they will travel to the center of our galaxy, where they will join the super civilizations that have made the journey before. It is a logical migration to a point where there is unlimited energy and which is free from the deadly radiations that lurk in space, as a constant danger to all living beings. In addition, being in the center, they are in an ideal spot to be able to explore the galaxy. The difficulty for our investigations is that with the most advanced telescopes, we still have very little data at our disposal. In order to make progress in research, scientists around the world are faced with a natural barrier that is extremely difficult to overcome, interstellar dust. At Palomar, in the United States, the telescope has been adjusted to include infrared research, thereby partially overcoming the problem. We know that radio is the answer if we ever want to solve the mystery of what we believe to be the highly populated area of our galaxy. Work in this direction has begun at Rattan 600, although it is still in its early stages. I am sure that in the next 10 years we will know what is happening there. At the moment, we still have to find out how many stars there are and their density, and also the size of the gaseous accumulations and their movements. Where have these people found a haven? That they are very advanced in relation to us is certain, as is our conviction that they have found us. In any case, the question remains as to how curious they are about us. Enough to come and take a look? Quite possibly. Aboard the UFOs picked up by our radars. Why not? They could use laws of physics unknown to us. Before we establish contact with them, we need some information. Initially, we want to know what kind of life they represent and the level of their development. Surely they can give us advice regarding our future development. They may even suggest that we build a gigantic spaceship and join them where they are, although probably at the present stage of life and technology on Earth that very idea is beyond our comprehension. However, for astrophysicists it is an option that we must consider. But what about the planets closer to us? At distances of 11, 20, 40 or 60 light-years. Why should the signals reaching Rattan 600 come from the center of the galaxy and not from these planets? There was life on some of them, but it no longer exists. They are planets abandoned by their populations who emigrated aboard gigantic nose arcs millions of years ago. I am confident that in the next 5 years American optical telescopes in space will discover dark planets orbiting some of these nearby stars. Then, with the help of gigantic telescopes, we will be able to explore their surface. We will discover remains of lost civilizations that have emigrated. Since they will have left them at the beginning of our civilization, they will not have been able to know of our future existence. Our astronauts will travel there and bring us proof. When? We will need another 50 years of accelerated progress for that. Astrophysicist Lev Mironovich Gindilis agrees with Dr. Kardashov's statements. I also expect great results from Rattan 600. I am absolutely convinced that these other civilizations are trying to communicate with us, and I wish we could officially admit that these signals have been received. Where I differ from Dr. Kardashov is in his statement that most of the civilizations near us have disappeared. I believe that they are also there, waiting to establish a dialogue with us. The largest radio telescope in the world, located in Arecibo, Puerto Rico, built by the United States, can capture radio signals coming from a distance of 100 light-years. Now, within the radius of 100 light-years of the Earth there are approximately 1,000 star systems, and some of these systems could have a planet capable of harboring life. Diario/Est. Is there life in the cosmos? Seville, February 24, 1982. Coprensu Agency. The Great Hope. If I had to find a certain order in those ideas, conclusions, feelings or deductions that have germinated in me throughout these pages, I would say the following. 1. Of those 300 long cases examined here, only a minimal percentage can be described as fraud. It is not true, therefore, that the majority of UFO photos existing in the world are false. Whoever can make such an assertion is just talking. 2. The ships photographed long before the Second World War, as we have been able to verify, are not secret weapons of the great human powers. Before, long before man used the jet plane, on September 30, 1929, UFOs were already flying over the world at speeds that we cannot even dream of today. All the military in the world I know this. 3. These ships, consequently, do not come from Earth. 4. These ships, logically, are directed or manned intelligently. 5. And the study of these 1,000 graphic documents shows us that UFOs have been and are over any objective, from a volcanic eruption to a military base, next to an experimental plane, near our astronauts or very close to small or large human agglomerations. 6. Their occupants, the UFO pilots, know man and planet Earth infinitely better than we do. 7. Only since the invention of photography have they been able to be caught by our civilization. But, really, since when have they visited us? 8. It is they who seem to choose the place, the moment and the photographer who will be in charge of leaving testimony of their presence. Of the 300 cases analyzed here, a third meet the necessary requirements to suspect such a conclusion. 9. We do not know the reasons, but the crew members of these UFOs seem to have fun at the expense of scientists and great photography professionals. The vast majority of UFO photos have been and are taken by. 10. With rare exceptions, these ships remain before the photographer just long enough to obtain 1, 2 or 3 images. Curiously, these few shots are almost always the last on the roll. 11. It is equally strange that more than 33% of the photographers who have captured images of UFOs have had the clear sensation that the object was allowing itself to be photographed. 12. Although, as I announced at the time, I am preparing a broad work on the so-called invisible UFOs, I must advance that the reality of this phenomenon in the 1,000 photographs exhibited here is another constant. I would add that a constant of the utmost importance, at all levels. 13. The obvious fact that none of these ships belonging to very different galactic or dimensional humanities makes public and official contact with the man of Earth forces us to think of one or several motives that are strictly respected by all of them. It is very probable that their freedom, their concept of their own and others' freedom, is radically different from ours. 14. Another unquestionable fact emerges from this study: they are watching us closely. 15. It is perfectly plausible that these thousands of graphic documents and films obey a perfect and meticulous plan to raise the awareness of the human being, in relation to other realities. And I end with a feeling that can only fill us with joy and hope: the future of the man of this planet is already being marked by these ships. We are perhaps like the baby who has managed to sit up in his cradle and discovers around him other beings, much older, much more expert and much wiser. Antarctica, a great food reserve. Remember, they told me that we should not pay attention to the predictions of the serious specialists in the matter, Malthusian or not Malthusian, when they affirm that the world will not be able to feed the 8 billion inhabitants of the planet Earth in the first decades of the year 2000. And they assured me that with the resources known to them of the Earth, 40 to 50 billion human beings could live with dignity. Well, please read these extracts from an article that appeared in the national press, Antarctica, a continent of ice that can feed the entire planet. Antarctica, with 98% of its total volume frozen, possibly has the largest reserves of both sea and minerals on the entire planet. Also called the new El Dorado, it is dematerialized, and any kind of storage of nuclear materials is prohibited in its ice. Likewise, the flora and fauna of these lands are protected by a treaty, whose signatory members have already established a series of scientific bases for the study and research of the natural resources of Antarctica. In the chapter on food, it is estimated that its resources are certainly very valuable. For example, the exploitation of krill, belonging to the family of crustaceans, which, according to studies, could perfectly feed the entire Earth. Since although its exploitation is little recognized, it seems that it could have a production of 100 to 150 million tons per year. As for the mineral resources of Antarctica, under a layer of sky of more than 2,000 meters, the main raw materials that humanity needs are concentrated in the depths of the sea that surround the continent, as well as in its adjacent seas. There is a great quantity of oil and cubic meters of natural gas, methane, etc. With all this, it must be said that one of the main seas that bathe the entire territory, the Weddell, is the one that holds the greatest quantity of living beings. El Creu Catalan, Barcelona, May 5, 1982, page 18. A small tribute to Miguel de Cervantes, The Golden Age, Don Quixote's speech to the goaters. Before giving the floor to Don Miguel de Cervantes, through the mouth of Don Quixote de la Mancha, let us underline a couple of things. The first is that we only know of one country where the famous novel of the illustrious one-handed man is little less than the bedside book of the vast majority of its inhabitants, socialist Cuba. And the second, that it is here, precisely in Spain, the birthplace of the author and his main characters, and the setting of such long and instructive adventures, the place where those incomparable and unsurpassable life lessons signed and signed by the ingenious gentleman and his faithful and sagacious squire are least known. Often, speaking of our times, the modern era, and two steps away from the 21st century, already in the so-called technological era, we have come to the conclusion, with friends who share our concern about the incessant dehumanization of our, it is a fact that we are living in a world where the experiences of our children and grandchildren are the same, that of the terrestrial civilization, more specifically that imposed by the overdeveloped countries, must take a break and examine to what extent it should go back, take a good look at reality, and resume the march towards progress through unmistakably progressive paths. That is to say, those in which man's conscience is above everything, including his stomach. It is not a question of returning to the Stone Age, of course, but it is possible that one day not far away the man and woman of the Earth will be forced to take stock of the different ages known to our civilization and extract from them the positive things that each of those ages contained and, with the recovered materials and the most useful ones that we now have, compose that Golden Age, as Don Quixote called it, which could constitute the future goal of humanity. That in which, to put it in the words of the Knight of the Sorrowful Countenance, there was neither yours nor mine, but rather no one's, which is, in short, everyone's. Now let us look at the conversation that Don Quixote dedicated to the goatherds and which demonstrates, if it were still necessary, that the golden ages have always been, are, within the reach of the human being of the earth. And that to reach them it is enough to propose it. Happy age and happy centuries those to which the ancients gave the name of gold, and not because in them gold, which in our age of iron is so highly valued, was obtained in that fortunate era without any effort, but because then those who lived in it ignored these two words of yours and mine. In that holy age all things were common. No one needed to undertake any other work to obtain his daily sustenance than to reach out and reach for it from the strong oaks, which were generously inviting them with their sweet and ripe fruit. The clear springs and running rivers, in magnificent abundance, offered them tasty and transparent waters.